Good morning, everybody. I want to thank those of you who have been managing to get through all the industrial presentations. Third in a row, we're going strong here, and appreciate you taking time. For those of you new to the room, I'm Steve Winoker, U.S. Multi-Industry and Electrical Equipment Analyst at Bernstein, and we are delighted to have Inge Thulin here, who is our new CEO and Chairman of 3M. Inge, you've graced us with your presence last year as well with George.
Right.
But now the stage is all yours.
Right.
So I'm going to hand it off to you, and then remember that as Inge is speaking, please feel free to fill out cards with questions, and I will do my best to get through those, send them to the center, raise your hands, and they'll come up to me. Okay? Thanks. Inge.
Thank you, Steve, and good morning, everyone. My name is Inge Thulin, and I'm the new Chairman and President and CEO of 3M. I thought this morning I would talk a little bit about 3M, give you an overview in terms of how it looked like for us, a little bit of the direction as we move forward, and then we go into Q&A relatively fast this morning. So first of all, when you look upon our business, you can see on this chart that we are really a global company in total. And on the left-hand side, you can see our geographical split, which is 34% in the United States, and that's a big core business for us, over $10 billion, and this is where we started our operation. You can also see that Asia-Pacific is the second biggest geographical area with 31%, followed by Europe, which here includes Europe, Middle East, Africa, and Central East Europe, and that stands for 24% of operation, and then finally Latin America and Canada, 11%. When you look on the right-hand side, you see the split relative to our six business segments where we are a leading provider of solutions and product in all of them. And you can see that one-third of the company is in industrial and transportation, and that is where we have a very strong position in tapes, abrasives, and adhesives. Second biggest for us is healthcare, where we serve hospitals and medical clinics, dentists, and food safety products. A very strong position for us on a global base and is now starting to grow very, very well in the developed world as well. Consumer and office sells to mass retail, office retail, and do-it-yourself channels and drugstores, leveraging very strong brands such as Post-it, Scotch, Filtrete, Command, and Scotch-Brite, just to mention a couple of them. Safety and security and protection is 13% of the portfolio, and there we have a very leading position in personal safety solutions, also service in terms of security, infrastructure, and commercial and residential markets. Display and graphics consist of three businesses, and you can see here it's 12% of our portfolio, and we are a leading provider of films for highway signages, for advertising and brand identity, and of course for displays into LCD business. And then finally, electro and communication, that is 11% of our business, where we serve utilities, telecoms, and consumer electronic OEMs. So you can see global business around $30 billion on a global base and very good positions as we move ahead. You can also see relative to our profitability that very profitable business with over 20% margins in all segments, which is giving us a good strength in terms of both operation today and investment for the future. So also giving us premium returns as an operation, and we've done so for the last decade, as I will show you in a second. This one is showing our global capabilities and local executions, and you can see here that we basically touch customers every day, every minute around the globe. We have a lot of subsidiaries that are wholly owned subsidiaries executing our plans, and the important thing here is that they are wholly owned subsidiaries, meaning it's the first entry into any country we are going, meaning we can make the priorities as we move. And we have wholly owned subsidiaries in 68 countries around the world, and we make business in 200 of them. We have also over 30 laboratories globally, and we have over 200 manufacturing sites, and in total we are 84,000 employees serving our global customers and our local customers. Now, as I moved into the office, one thing we did very early was to clarify division for the company. And when you look upon our portfolio going everything from industrial and transportation, safety, security, healthcare, over to retail, it became very clear for us that we are touching points that many of our competitors not even are coming close to. We also ask ourselves the question, what is a vision all about? A vision is, of course, something that is timeless. A vision is something that is calling out why you do things. It's calling out what you do and where you do it. And in terms of any company, it should be authentic and it should really call out what you stand all about. So when you look upon a vision, it should say, is this the company I represent? Will this represent the company we're talking about? And in this case, 3M. One thing that is unique with 3M, everyone at 3M, starting with the research and development, are always thinking about how we can advance, enhance, and improve things. I think that's the key element. That's why we do things. How we do that, we do it through technology, products, and innovation. And where we do it in companies, homes, and lives. And it's a very compelling vision for us because we believe in terms of every company that we can provide solution to every company around the world, either through products that are used in order to improve the productivity and efficiency in the manufacturing lines, and or specified into a product. We also know that we can be in every home, either through product we sell ourselves, either in terms of window films, Scotch-Brite, Scotch, but equally important, other products that we specified in to some of our customers. And in terms of the life sign, you can see that we are big in healthcare. We're also providing solutions into schools. And on top of that, we are a company that for many years have a very high reputation around sustainability. So by definition, every life is something where we can improve through innovation. So the vision is holistic, it's timeless, it's a stretch, but we believe it's something that we can strive for, and meaning also that as we execute through six very specific strategies, we have a good roadmap as we move ahead. And as I end this presentation, there will be a video clip that probably explains the vision better than I can talk about it. If we move ahead here, in terms of our return, you can see that we are leading company in terms of earnings per share growth over the past decade. And you can see here that we have had 11% CAGR over that decade. So impressive return over a long period of time. And our business model is in such a shape and layout that is have made us clear in terms of how we have been able to do it. And if you take out pharmaceutical, it's actually 12% CAGR over the period. In terms of our return on invested capital and operating margins, you can see here that we over the decade have really delivered very well on this metric as well. And you can see that we have gone from 17% margins in 2002 to 21% in 2011. And we have been on the margins above 20% the whole time since 2004. And you can also see the return on invested capital have constantly been over 20%. Our business model is providing a very good integrated way for us to do this, where we leverage manufacturing, research and development, and our execution capabilities around the world. When we look upon our growth rate, you can see in the same period that we have gone from a $15 billion company to a $30 billion company during this period. So we have had a 7.5% annual sales increase on a CAGR since 2002. And you can see here that have been 1.5x worldwide versus IPI and during the 10-year period. And during the last five, that have been 1.7x IPI. So a slight increase and improvement during the last 5 years. So on all three metrics, we have performed well during the last 10 years due to a very good business model that we have in place. The developing countries have played an important role in this, and you can see that we have gone from 2002 of around $3 billion to today around $10 billion. So 19% of the total to 34% of the total during the period. And we still believe here's huge upside for us as we move ahead, as our penetration is much lower in this part of the world. And here you can see how we have delivered back to the shareholders during a period of $30 billion in cash and gross share repurchase. We take 17 plus 13 in dividends and gross share repurchase coming to $30 billion. And you can see that 90% of the net income
have gone back to the shareholders during this period of time. And we have had 54 consecutive years of dividend increase. So we will say very solid company in terms of long-term performance and return to shareholders. We're also off to a very good start as we started this year. And here you have a summary of the first quarter. And you can see that we had EPS going up by 7% year on year to 159, which included a 4 cent of one-time action. We had very strong price and excellent productivity, and the productivity came specifically out from the manufacturing side in the factories. And we had a very good cost control everywhere around the world, as we at this time is in a volatile situation economically, so cost management was under control. And on top of that is what's a record sales for Q1 of 7.5 billion with very strong strengths in industrial and the safety businesses. So what we have done here in terms of continue to build for the future, first of all, we have formed the last couple of months a couple of new businesses. We have formed one business that is into oil and gas and mining, total dedicated in order to leverage scale for us in order to execute in that plan. And we have also formed an aerospace division and a defense markets division. We have consolidated four divisions down to two. We consolidated security system and track and trace, and we consolidated office supplies and stationary products. All of them in order to get scale and leverage, one of them which is office supplies and stationary in order to get the commercialization footprint that is stronger for us in a consolidated market. And in terms of security and systems and track and trace, it's order for us to leverage the back end in terms of technologies and then have a different vertical in the front. You can also see here that we start to accelerate investment in key areas in emerging markets like China, India, and Latin America is very important for us with a very good base, very good position, high margins, and still big growth opportunities for us. And then healthcare and personal safety are two areas where we see huge opportunities and we start to invest more in terms of commercialization for those businesses. The other thing is to enhance our technology platforms, and it's an important element for us as we move ahead. As you know, that's the center of the plan for us, and it's very important we work with what we call customer-inspired innovation. We do not do anything with more than we have the customer involved in order to really understand the outcome of it. It can be an application for them in terms of execution. And you can see that on the left-hand side that we have the R&D platforms, that is 45. On the outside, on the right-hand side, is the outcome, which is the MPVI outcome. And MPVI for us is a new product vitality index, which we have moved under George Buckley's leadership from around 19% to 32%. So our pipeline is much more robust today in terms of new product that we can introduce and commercialize. Two areas that I ask will make a short comment on relative to platforms that we try to advance. The first one is advanced composites. And here we're using four technology platforms to address market needs. And the market needs here is to get more strength, get more toughness, reduce weight, and have more fuel efficiency. And you can see here with those platforms and technologies, we're able to address five markets, which is dental, aerospace, power transmission, automotive, and oil and gas. A classical example where 3M can put multiple technology platforms together, address needs in the market, and then be able to commercialize. So very effective. The other one that I would make some comment on is advanced lighting. And here you have, again, multiple technologies that is addressing a couple of needs in the market. And it is to enhance reflectivity, give lighter weight, have more sustainable product, and increase design flexibility. And again, you can see this is for multiple divisions that we can do this. So think about 3M as technology platform, markets, and then applications. And the strength for 3M is that we can put all the platforms to work, and the platforms, as you probably know at this point in time, is owned by the company, and the product is owned by the division and the subsidiaries. The other thing I talked about was the formation of a mining, oil, and gas solution division. That's an important element for us, and the challenge in that market that our customers are looking for is increase productivity, improve safety, and then environmental issues, and then of course power of lighting solutions. And for us, what we are working on is exactly in this area, where we now, with the formation of a business, where we put additional resources in terms of research and development, a strong proven leader will move much more aggressively into this market, and this was formed during the last quarter. So as we move ahead, we believe a couple of things. First of all, we have a very strong, diverse, and global portfolio. We have a global capability with a local execution capability and capacity around the world with our subsidiaries. Innovation is the center of our plan. That is what 3M is all about. Will remain in that way, and that is why we are successful and have a competitive advantage over many of our competitors. And we will continue to drive superior, consistent level of operational excellence. We are well known and well respected for what we have done with the Lean Six Sigma, and we will continue to do so. It's a really important element for us. And then, as you saw earlier, we have a balance sheet and a cash generation machine here that is very strong. So we have a long record of good performance in terms of return to shareholders, and as we move ahead, that is something we are committed to. So by that, I stop here. We will see a small vision clip, a video clip of the vision that I talked about before, which I hope will give you a good picture of what 3M is all about when you think about the three statements in the vision. So thank you.
Video. I have to say that across all the companies I always follow, I always think yours are the most the coolest products.
Okay.
And so you're inheriting a company where all the things that we just saw touch on everybody's lives every day. So I have a series of questions from the audience and me, but let me start with the audience ones around you taking over the leadership of the company, right? And so I think I'm going to end up asking this question three different ways,
okay,
right?
Okay.
But they're essentially around what's going to be different, right? So and maybe rephrasing it after. You've been at 3M for something like 35 years or so?
Oh, not really, but 30 plus.
30
not,
plus. Okay, not yet.
Soon, yeah.
So obviously there's a lot of continuity, but how do you plan to focus, prioritize, and rebalance the company going forward?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I've had the advantage to work for WID and for George for the last 6 years, and I think that was big learning for me, specifically around the commitment to research and development. George did a terrific job the last 6 years to revitalize research and development and got that whole focus back. And I think it's obvious when we see the new product vitality index have gone up from 19 to 32%. We will continue with that. That's something that is important. Our manufacturing piece is also well run as we speak. So now I think one of the things for us is now we need to improve our commercialization capabilities. So I think the pipeline is strong enough now that what we have to do is to make sure that we on a global scale can be more effective in commercialization. So that's one thing. The other thing is you saw already some first move relative to consolidation of a couple of divisions. Four divisions was consolidated down to two, and for different reasons. One is for scale and leverage, which is important into the office supply and stationary product channels, which will give us more strength and give us a better capability in terms of execution. And then track and trace and the security system was pulled together in order for them to get more capabilities in the back end and more research and development capabilities, even if the verticals in the front is different. And then, as you saw, also some additional investment in areas where we have very, very strong positions today in healthcare and personal safety, where we start to move in some more resources in order to accelerate the commercialization of the products. More than that, I would say, as we speak, we asked, it was important, we developed a plan together, George, myself, and David Malin as our CFO. I took over early in the year, so what we are now is to execute the plan, and then our strategic planning cycle is starting mid-year, and that is where we type of look upon if there's some businesses that we should give higher priorities as we move ahead. But as you see, the portfolio is very good, very profitable, and we have leading positions in all of them.
Okay, so next related question is, what do you bring to the company as a new CEO? How are you different from the prior CEO?
Well, I think what I bring, I bring a global perspective. I led international for almost 8 years, so I have a good understanding of the international markets. I'm also bringing a hands-on experience from both developing and developed countries. I've led businesses myself in France, in Belgium, in Sweden, which is very developed economies, by the way. I've also led hands-on business in Russia, which is a developing economy. And I've led business for out in Asia, where I was the vice president for Asia Pacific for a couple of years. So I think that's what I'm bringing. I'm also bringing some type of commercialization capabilities and ideas to the company as I'm coming from a marketing background initially. So I think that's what I will bring. And as I said earlier, I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to work both with McNerney, where we drove Six Sigma, Lean Six Sigma efficiency into the organization during 5 years. And as you could see, that was when we had the margins going from 17 to 22%. And then under George, where we came more a theme around accelerated the minds in terms of growth and investment in research and development. So I think we are in a very good position as a company, because the good thing during George time is we maintained the margins. So when we drove it the first 5 years in terms of efficiency, productivity, when we start to focus more on research and development and prepare ourselves for commercialization, we didn't lose the efficiency and productivity and efficiency in the organization. So I think we're in a very good place.
I mean, one of the key differences, of course, is that you've been a 3Mer for a very long period of time relative to those last two guys who came in from the outside. And as you sort of sat there as a 3Mer managing these different businesses around the world and looking at that kind of leadership and thinking that what you'll do differently from what the outsiders who had to learn the 3M culture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what does that mean for investors? Or how do you?
Well, I think we can move faster in terms of some small changes that need to be done. You know, I think when you're coming from outside, there's a lot of things you need to learn, which will take you some time. I think the challenge for me is, as I'm part of the organization, is to really challenge myself the whole time relative to changes that should be made. Now, I will say, and I think people will say about me that know me well, that I've been involved in both expansion of businesses and downsizing of businesses. So I'm not afraid to really go on tough issues and make changes, and hopefully we'll be able to do that rather sooner than later in terms of what needs to be done.
Okay, and two more of these, and then we'll move on to the
the
business and the outside questions on the environment. One is, how do you characterize your management style and philosophy as compared to maybe the predecessors?
You know, I will not talk so much about them. I talk about myself, right? I'm an individual that believe in prioritization. I'm a big person to believe in prioritization. I believe in have very clear direction relative to where the company is going, which is one of the reasons why I very early went out with a clear vision and also restated 6 strategies for the company. Where 4 are around growth, 1 is around people, and 1 is around operational excellence. And I'm a believer in teamwork and collaboration. So I believe that's an important element for me as we move ahead, is have clarity around where you're going, prioritize what you have to do, get the team with you as soon as that's decided on, and then play as a team in order to win.
Does that mean saying no to certain things?
Absolutely.
Are there any examples you could give us already?
I've already said no to a couple of proposals relative to some acquisitions that were proposed. So I'm not afraid to say no.
Well,
I'm not afraid to say yes either. But I think it's important that you prioritize, and it's important the organization know what the priorities are as you move ahead.
So since you mentioned acquisitions, although that's, I am veering off these for a second. Why did you say no? What was it about those acquisitions?
Well, that specific acquisition, I couldn't see that we would get the leverage on a global base in order to build out the platform. And I thought it was too local in one part of the world. So that's why I said no. And the financials wouldn't support it. So I believe, as you know, the company, we have done around 60 acquisitions the last 5 to 6 years. I think that was a good thing that we did at the time, because we built out the portfolio where we had some gaps until the NPVI, New Product Vitality Index, became more robust. So I think it was the right thing to do at the time. As our pipeline now is more robust, we should be able to do more organically, but we would still do acquisitions. But I would like to have them strategically focused in some areas where we today have a good base, and that we can integrate them faster and get better scale and leverage on a global base.
Winterthur is a good example, maybe, of the kind of thing you're talking about?
Winterthur is a good example of what I'm talking about. I think that's a very good, was a very good acquisition for us, and we build out our relevance in that market. And what you see there when you visit customers, I visit a lot of customers, and what you see is the relevance for 3M to the customer have increased dramatically. And it's not only relative to abrasives. It's into personal safety and other products that we are selling, both in safety and security and the industrial and transportation. So building out relevance in the market and with your customers is very, very important. You get more time with them, and you will be able to work on solutions with them. But that's one good example where you can expand.
So people shouldn't expect, they shouldn't expect a very large deal, more, you know, you're talking about deals in the, you know, maybe up to a couple of billion, nothing huge.
No, I think you have to think about 3M, not as one big 3M, you have to think about the 35 smaller 3Ms. So the divisions are responsible for integration together with the countries when we have done it. So what we look upon can look like a small acquisition for the company, could be a very big one for that business. So I think that's how you should look upon it. It's not, we have set aside 1 to 2 billion this year for acquisitions, and that is what we have done historically, and I think that's where the frame we are going, but I think you will not see so many very small acquisitions around the world in many different places that are really, really tiny, small one in Norway or in Chile and so forth. So I think you will see something that is slightly bigger and that we can leverage more on a global basis.
But still within that same framework.
Exactly.
You provided.
Yep.
And Europe providing some more opportunities for buying things now?
I don't know that. Maybe it will. I don't think the values are at the level today that it's interesting to do them, to be honest, right? So I think there is a mismatch in between the market space and the values and the company and the seller's expectation what they would get from it. So maybe over time, but I think at this point in time for us in Europe is very much operational excellence and make sure that we deliver on the plan in a tough economical situation.
Okay, let me just wrap up these couple of larger high-level CEO questions, thanks. One is, are there new meaningful strategies that you would like to implement versus the prior initiatives?
Well, they are...
Pyramid, emerging markets.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the pyramid strategy was a strategy around building out relevance in the marketplace, and I think that is an important element. But the pyramid strategy is not for everyone. It's not for every business. There is a good relevance for that if you're in orthodontics, for instance. It's not so relevant if you're in aerospace. Aerospace, you know, you have high-end, very sophisticated products. So it's every business has to build out the relevance for their reality of the market.
Well, how much of 3M do you think it can be covered then? Or how much of your portfolio is that relevant to?
Well, maybe 70 to 75%.
And you probably hit how much of it so far?
Well, I think we're maybe halfway through. And people are very careful of the execution around it, which is good, right? Because we are very, very careful in terms of our margins, our return to shareholders. And it should be profitable when you enter into different segments of the market. So if you're only today playing in the A category, you should owe your right to be in B and C, meaning you should make money in the whole category.
Okay, I'll come back to the margin questions in a second, but we heard a couple more on the CEO side. Which 2 to 3 CEOs do you admire the most and why?
I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. I admire individuals that spend times with employees and with customers and really try to understand the business models of customers. I think that's important. I think that's when you, in the end of the day, will be successful with your company, is when you really spend time in the market and with customers and understand their business model, because they have a proposition that they are working towards. And I don't think you will be a good provider of solutions or product if you do not really understand what did they promise their customers. I think that's a key element. So I will admire everyone that is spending time in order to understand the business model of their customers. And that's what I try to do, and I try to spend a lot of time externally with that, a lot of time with shareholders, but also then with employees in order to understand what is going on in their world.
I mean, I guess if you think about your big picture time allocation, you know, what do you hope to get to steady state-wise in terms of that, you know, percentage of time with customers versus at plants versus...
Yeah, I don't know. Initially here I've been a lot of time in areas like this, which I think is important. We are very committed to our shareholders and make sure that it's well understood what we stand for and where we try to go. And then, as I said, you know, in terms of out in the market and meet customers and meet people in the subsidiaries would be an important part as well.
Here's a question from the audience. I know you just received and was appointed given the title of chairman.
Yes.
But the question here is from the audience, would you be for the eventual separation of the chairman and CEO role? How do you think about that relative to some of the other companies that have gone that route?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a model that is used very much in Europe. I think it's very important that you as one individual can run the whole company and able to make decisions and move ahead. And as long as you have a very strong lead director, which we have, I think it's the best solution for you to lead a company, that you both are the chairman of the board and run the operation.
What's the best piece of advice you got from the board as you took over the this new role?
I think it's just personal advice. You know, make sure you balance your life. Make sure that you are yourself. Make sure you have fun, because some days will not always be that fun. So I think that's there's more on the personal side than on the business side.
I want to hear
that. I would like to share with you.
What's the single biggest misperception regarding 3M, you believe?
I think it's that we... I think it's not the misperception, but I think it's maybe sometime lack of understanding of the real capabilities for 3M in terms of being able to utilize the verticals in our business model. Where, as I said earlier, one way to look upon it is technology platforms as the base, markets, and then applications. And then we can use the assets broad-based in the company, both in terms of research and development, in terms of manufacturing assets, and then be able to commercialize it on a global base with the infrastructure that is in place. I think, and I think that is the real strength why we've been able to have this excellent, in my mind, excellent return to shareholders over years, is the very strong business model that we have and that we are using. I think that is maybe not really well understood, and I would say that the way I've talked about 3M during many years when I led international, it is this type of capability and capacity to both have technology platforms and manufacturing capabilities to produce very sophisticated products, and then geographical reach with wholly owned subsidiaries around the world, which take you a long time to build, and it's not the distribution network. It's 3M subsidiaries everywhere around the world. And the power with that is that as we have many global customers, we can help and support them wherever they move around the world. And they do, right? So you have in the automotive industry or aerospace or consumer electronics, they are moving around the world. They are expanding, and we are there in order to help them with whatever thing they have specified or worked on in the home country. I think that's maybe not well understood, and as I think about it.
Since you mentioned that, you're one of the few companies that I follow that still has a very, very strong matrix management structure.
Yeah.
Strong country managers,
yeah.
Strong lines of business.
Yes.
Tell us about why the benefits of that.
Yeah, the benefit is that you will get a very clear understanding of what is important in the local market. That is what the local managing director prioritizes in order to make sure we invest in the local markets. Every market is by definition different. That needs to be led locally. That's the responsibility of him or her, and they prioritize based on the opportunity locally. The businesses will interact in that dialogue, and I think that is the power of 3M. If there is a prioritization in a country that is very important for that specific country, but some strategic businesses will not make it on that list, that is where we have a very open, frank discussion, and when the top management can intervene in order to make sure that it's becoming a priority for business, because it's a global business. The other thing that is important is in times like this, where you need to really make sure you have 24/7 control of management relative to cost, that needs to be done locally. That needs to be done hands-on locally every day. So that is why that is important to have that responsibility in the local countries all around the world. And I've seen different business models, been part of different business models where it was run more centrally. And when you run the central model, everything works very well as long as there is growth and as long as people type of expand. Where, in my experience, where it breaks down is the day when you run into trouble and you need to act very fast. So that's why I believe our model is working very well for us. Now, is there some negatives to that? Well, sometimes maybe a little bit slowness in decision making, right? So that's what you have yourself to work on in an organization to make sure that you have speed in the decision making. But on balance, I prefer what we do to be honest.
And the incremental cost that you're able to make up for because the margin's still stronger.
Yeah, there is. And there is different roles and responsibilities. And you, if you think about it from a perspective in a geographical area, there's business development manager for every business that try to help and support the business by sharing best practices and so forth. So they are adding value, and I can tell you that we are very, very diligent relative to cost in our structure. And we are, because I think we have learned a lesson many years ago that could be easy to build up too much structure.
There are three big topics: capital allocation, growth, and margins that I've received from the audience. So let's start with capital allocation. Worded this way, you can say the balance sheet has been characterized as highly conservative.
Yeah.
And so there is certainly potential for more buybacks. Would you consider a more leveraged balance sheet, and how would you return the proceeds to shareholders?
Yeah. I've heard those comments, and my starting point is it's good to have a very strong balance sheet where I'm sitting. So that's where I'm starting. The way we are allocating capital is, first of all, to allocate relative to organic growth. So we put in growth for allocation of capital in order to do that, and this year's $1.5 billion in terms of capex for that. We're also putting in, of course, for dividends, which is second in terms of importance for us. And thirdly, it's around merger and acquisition, where we put this year $1 to $2 billion in terms of allocation. I think that payback will come rather later in the equation for us than after the dividend.
And pension?
Yeah, pension is an obligation for us, and this year we are putting in around $1 billion, and that's something that we have to do. So.
But the, I guess back, let me just push on this point a little bit, because it does come up frequently, at least in my discussions. It's good to have a strong balance sheet. The question is, how strong?
Yeah.
How do you draw the line? How do you think about how far you can push that so that you don't have to worry about jeopardizing the safety of the company?
Yeah. Well, where I'm sitting now after just a couple of months, right, it's something that David Meline and myself and Matt Ginton and the whole organization are talking about. So it's a little bit early for me to come out and make any statement around it at this point in time. We have done quite some work specifically under David Meline's leadership since he came in here after Pat Campbell a year ago. So I think later during the year we were able to talk about it.
Okay, so an area for investors to watch. Let me hit the other two two items then. I was about to get into organic growth longer term.
Okay.
Before I do that, give us what you're seeing even over the last couple of months globally, Europe, China, U.S., maybe just a very brief response.
Yeah, from our perspectives, the Americas is doing very well. So United States, Latin America, and Canada is doing very well, which is a type of shift for us from a historical base. And that is continuing. We see that month by month doing well. In Asia, for us, as we talked about on the earnings call, there's two things in Asia. One is Japan in terms of slowness of recovery, and the other one is China. And for us, specifically, China had three elements. One was domestic consumption, the other thing was consumer electronics, the third thing was export to West Europe. The export to West Europe, we said at that time, we did not believe it will come back this year. That's still the position. We believe that domestic consumption will improve as we went through the year, and so will consumer electronics. And I would say that that's still our belief as we sit here today. We have not really seen the real flow coming through in terms of orders, but we don't see a decline either, right? So I think we're still sticking to the outlook we had at the earnings call. West Europe is interesting in the way that you have a south and a north part of Europe in terms of performance. We see that have stabilized on a lower level. For us as a company, 3M, we have worked on this for a long time. We started more than 2 years ago by doing two things. First of all, we separated Central East Europe and Middle East Africa from West Europe because those two parts of the geographical area is growing much faster than West Europe. So we did that in order to make sure we could capitalize on growth in Central East Europe and Middle East Africa and drive more operational excellence in West Europe. So we did that. At the same time, we regionalized West Europe. So we formed Nordic, we formed Alpine, we formed Benelux, and we formed Iberia in order to streamline the organization, reduce management layers and management, and be able to make faster decisions. So the consolidation for us, if you like, in West Europe have gone on for more than 2 years in this way, right? We have constantly done things over the years, unfortunately, but that is reality there. And we have very strong management in Europe, which we have put in place for the reason we will have to very astute leaders, and every leader of the countries back in West Europe have been leaders in other subsidiaries before. So it's not the first position you go into. You're trained somewhere else before you go in and lead an operation in West Europe. So tougher situation. We don't see a pickup, as I said. It's stabilized on a lower level, and we just try to consolidate as much as we can in that part of the world. Now, you have to think about it, just talk about it. It's still 25% of the world's GDP, right? So it's a very important part of the world, and there is growth. There is growth in certain areas that we need to capitalize on. And many of our global customers are headquartered back there. And they specify and they drive a lot of innovation in technologies that then is capitalized around the world. If you go to many of the German companies like BMW, Mercedes, Siemens, etc.
You mentioned a couple areas of growth. What are a couple of examples?
Well, there is healthcare is still growing in some parts of the world. Safety is growing because those areas are regulated, very important for West Europe to follow regulations and have safe workplaces and protect assets, etc. So that's still growing very well.
Yeah, I think I have time for one growth question and one margin question. On the growth side, so your organic growth target over in the medium term is above your historic growth rate.
Yes.
Why is that, and is it realistic?
Yeah. Well, if you're talking about the 7-8 that was laid out maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I think first of all we have to put that in perspective and say that was laid out during George Buckley's leadership, as I would say, in a different economical environment, right? The world has changed since that time. I view 7-8 as a stretch target, to be honest. And as you saw in the presentation here, we have had a growth over the last decade of 7.4. Organic growth 3.4. So we are halfway to that target, and we need to step up in terms of coming closer to a growth target like that, which we are doing. And I believe that with a more robust new product vitality index pipeline in terms of product and in improved commercialization, we will come closer. But look upon it as a stretch target of 7-8, and then we have to take it step by step by step in order to improve the growth rate. And again, for me, we have multiple metrics here to look upon. We have return on invested capital, we have EPS, and we have margins in total. So we have multiple metrics that we try to balance here, and I would say we are doing well most of them, right? We would like to grow more, and we will come there. So
on the maybe the final question on margins, please speak to why U.S. margins are below Latin America and Asia, despite presumably more of well, this is healthcare mix.
Yeah, okay. Despite healthcare mix?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, first of all, we have lower margins in West Europe and United States versus what we have in APAC, Latin America, and even in Canada. There's a historical reason to that. One is when you build up businesses many, many years ago, you build a different type of infrastructure which you have in place. That is something you have today in West Europe. Something you still have in the United States. We are constantly challenging that in terms of making new operational structures taking place. Also, the United States is covering some of the costs for the global expansion, right? So that is why you have it. Now, you look upon it and say, that is also an opportunity for us, right? That's something that we constantly will challenge, specifically what I would call in the back office. Make sure on the staff side, all support functions, etc., that we are more efficient and drive more productivity, and then hopefully can make the investment in the front line in terms of commercialization. And that's true both for United States and for West Europe.
Okay, great. Inga, are there any final words you'd like to leave everybody with today?
No, thank you very much for taking the time, and hope to see you soon again.
Great. Thanks, Inga.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.